It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up with state Democrats pushing for nonpartisan redistricting reform, we hear from a supporter to the movement about why he says it's an issue everyone should care about. First, it's time for a weekly review of state news with our Wisconsin News Roundup. It's a busy week at the state capitol with lawmakers deciding on an amendment for a fetal tissue bill and holding a hearing focused on an audit of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. In other state news, a story broke earlier this week that showed Assembly Majority Leader Robin Voss's office filed paperwork for state open records law changes weeks after an initial proposal had been shot down. We're joined now by Molly Beck, state capitol reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, for the latest on these stories. Molly, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I just mentioned a news came out this week that Robin Voss's office filed these changes, asked for a draft of legislation on the open records law after the original changes came out and after the backlash. What can you tell us about this news this week?
Well, he has responded in a way that has, people scratching their heads a little bit, because after that backlash in early July, when Republicans sought to put in the state budget language that would have kept virtually all records made by lawmakers private, a few weeks later, he had one of his staffers draft new language that would essentially do the same thing. They could, their records would be subject to their own rules that they could make instead of the state's open records law. And that means that they could amend their rules without the approval of the governor or the other house, like is the case now. But when reporters started asking about it, Voss said that draft language was just a way to end the process of the open records discussion, essentially, and to reflect the Assembly's original intent in case the Legislative Study Committee took up the issue. But then he also said that there was no discussion about forming a legislative study committee. So there's some mixed messages there, but in the end, he ultimately said that there is no plans to change the open records law.
Right. So this draft of legislation is something he says now that he was not planning to introduce, is not planning to introduce. Is that right?
He said he's not planning to introduce it. And this was drafted in late July by a staffer who had been coordinating the earlier revisions of the open records law that everybody learned about in early July. He has since left the speaker's office, and according to the drafting files of this bill, there hasn't been any work on it since July.
And we had that effort in the budget just before the 4th of July to change open records laws. There's also been talk in a forum held by the state's attorney general that, okay, maybe not those changes, but we've got new types of technology. We don't know how open records laws apply to them always. So is there a thought that, hey, at some point people are going to get together and try to hash out open records laws, maybe not as drastically as some of those changes, but something will change?
Sure. Yeah, I think that Attorney General Brad Schimmel, that's been, a priority of his since he was elected. He's been talking about the public records law needs to be updated to reflect modern technology, especially with a focus on police work and body cameras and, the retention of recordings if that's, the way that police departments would like to go. He says that the open records law doesn't address that because it was written, a couple decades ago. But, people who have been kind of, on the side of preserving open records law say that the way that it's written could address all of those issues, even if they don't specifically outline, police body cameras or technology.
Talking to Molly Beck from the Wisconsin State Journal in our weekly roundup of big stories in Wisconsin politics. Molly, changing gears, state lawmakers held a hearing based on an audit of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation that's gotten a lot of criticism in recent years and in recent weeks in particular. So take us to this hearing. What was going on there?
Sure. Well, it was the legislature's audit committee, and they were reviewing an audit from May of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And I would say the most notable finding in that audit was that the agency is tasked with, creating and tracking how many new jobs Wisconsin has, they haven't been verifying those job numbers. And some lawmakers expressed concern with that. You know, how do we know that these jobs numbers are accurate if we're not reviewing the information that auditors say they should be reviewing, which is payroll records? The auditors there said that if they don't look at wages paid or hours worked, it's difficult to determine whether the businesses that are receiving state financial incentives are actually meeting their obligations. And if the businesses are creating low-wage part-time jobs, they aren't meeting the criteria that allows them to get the financial incentives. So there, at the end of the hearing, there was some talk about introducing some legislation that might address some of the issues that people have been hearing about with the agency. Senator Robert Cole said he would like to draft a bill that would ban the agency from giving tax credits to businesses without a contract and require businesses that receive tax credits to actually increase the number of jobs. Democratic lawmakers Julie Latha and Peter Barca also would like to introduce legislation that would overhaul the agency.
I know at least some Republican lawmakers, or one or two anyway, had suggested, hey, maybe if companies receive loans from WEDIC, as people call it, and don't pay it back, don't create the jobs they're supposed to be creating, maybe they should be charged with fraud. Is that something that came up at this hearing?
That didn't come up at this hearing, but, you know, Governor Scott Walker said this week that he would consider a proposal to create criminal penalties for defrauding the jobs agency. And Republican Samantha Kirkman said, you know, the same thing. She said that if you lie to the agency, it should be a crime. So I'm sure there will be some further discussion about that.
And finally, an assembly committee voted on amendments to the fetal tissue research bill this week. This has been in the news a lot over the last few weeks. What changed in this amendment?
So the amendment allows some research to continue, but not on newly gathered fetal tissue. So after January 1, any fetal tissue that has been gathered since then can't be used for research. And that amendment was enough to get it passed, but two Republicans actually voted against it because they don't like the provision that would criminalize the research if somebody chose to do research on the newly gathered tissue.
Right, potentially a felony charge under
right.
the legislation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So most of these issues go to a party line vote in committees, but as you say, some Republicans broke ranks on the amendment.
Right. And this week, the state's largest business lobbying group, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, they came out against the bill, too, which is significant given their influence. The president said that even with the new amendment, members see it as a way that would block research. But, you know, Andre Jacques, who's, you know, been behind this, just said he doesn't expect the lobbying group to come out forcefully, but we'll see.
So what is next now that this amendment has passed and it passed out of its committee there?
It sounds like a floor vote on the bill could come as soon as next week. But because there has some dissension within Republican ranks, it raises the question about whether that floor vote will come that quickly.
Molly, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's State Capitol reporter Molly Beck from the Wisconsin State Journal, giving us the latest on the biggest headlines from around the state in our Wisconsin News Roundup. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, 9 of the 10 largest cities in Wisconsin have decriminalized simple marijuana possession. We'll talk to a reporter who analyzed the patchwork of marijuana laws and ordinances around the state. First, we'll take a look at a new effort to reform the state's redistricting laws. State Democrats introduced legislation Tuesday that would give authority to a nonpartisan redistricting committee to establish the state's voting districts. Wisconsin's current districts were drawn by Republicans in 2011. Past efforts to change the system in 2012 failed. Currently, there are two bills, one in the Senate, one in the Assembly, that are waiting for public hearings. Joining us now to talk about the issue is Roger Utnehmer. He's owner of Nicolay Broadcasting and board member of Common Cause in Wisconsin. Roger, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank Thank you very much for the opportunity to visit.
Well, you spoke in favor of these bills at a press conference unveiling this legislation this week. Make the case. Why are you in favor of changing the way we set our districts here in the state?
Well, there are two major benefits when legislative races are competitive. Number one, a redefinition of our district boundaries will make the legislative districts more compact. That means that communities will keep their sense of identity. Instead of being divided between two and three legislative districts where people need a PhD in cartography to figure out where they vote. The second and more compelling reason for redistricting reform is districts need to be more competitive. In Wisconsin in 2014, only 10% of legislative races were competitive, defined as a margin of victory of 10 points or less. That meant that only 3 of 6 of 33 Senate, 9 of 99 Assembly races, and 3 of 17 Senate races were competitive. We need competitive elections because it will diminish partisanship and it will foster a sense of compromise and conciliation between the parties and make Wisconsin government better than it is today.
Now, Roger, redistricting reform isn't always seen as a sexy issue, not something that gets voters riled up. Do you think that this is something that the public wants and is maybe willing to say out loud that they want?
Every poll that I've seen indicates public support for reform. When people see that a majority of votes in 2012 assembly races went to Democrats and a majority of seats went to Republicans, there's the perception that that just is not fair. The statistics were Democrats getting 170,000 more votes than Republicans and only winning 39 of 99 seats. I believe that the people of Wisconsin want fairness, they want competition, they want compromise, they want open, transparent government. I believe that government needs to be as good as the people.
Well, let's throw this to our listeners. Do you want to see redistricting reform in Wisconsin, changing the way we draw the maps of who votes for which district? Is this an important issue to you? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Now, Roger, let's get into some of the details. How would a new system work? Right now, it's the legislature is in charge of drawing it. Sometimes it goes to the courts, of course, but it's mainly the legislature. What happens to this new
party? The majority party drafts the legislation and passes the bill. It had been done outside by the courts in the last two reapportionments. The last time it was done in 2011 when Republicans controlled both the Senate and the Assembly. It became a time-consuming and legally challenging process that also cost the taxpayers a great deal of money. The model that Common Cause Wisconsin is advocating right now is based on Iowa, where a nonpartisan body comparable to our Legislative Reference Bureau will draw the boundaries and then have that plan approved by the legislature. If you look at the map of the state of Iowa's congressional and state legislative districts, they are straight lines, their communities of interest are protected, it looks clean and crisp. If you look at Wisconsin legislative maps, you see true gerrymandering at its worst, where you do need a PhD in cartography to figure out where you're going to end up voting.
The trick here is getting legislators to approve this, right? Democrats had a majority a while back in both houses of the legislature, didn't reform. Republicans have it now. They haven't shown a big interest in reforming. I think everybody hopes they're the ones in charge when they draw the next map. Can you get bipartisan support for something like this?
Well, there was a time when Wisconsin Democrats controlled both the Senate Assembly and the governor's office. And Democrats today have a sense of regret that they did not foster nonpartisan redistricting reform when it was possible. I believe today that if people find out the opportunity to restore competition, to diminish partisanship, to foster an environment where people seek a middle ground and work together and cooperate, Wisconsin government will be better and people will support that. The challenge right now is simply education, because this is not an issue that motivates and engenders a great deal of activity. It's not one that fuels passion. But I advocate for reform because I believe it is absolutely essential that our government be better than it is today.
Talking to Roger Utenhamer, owner of Nicolet Broadcasting, board member of Common Cause Wisconsin, about reforming Wisconsin's redistricting process, the way we draw our maps for assembly and Senate races and congressional districts here in Wisconsin. We'll go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. We've got Tammy on the line in Milwaukee. Tammy, hi.
Hi, yes. I'm glad this effort is underway, but I don't know how we would get people in the state legislature, Republicans especially, to vote against their own interests when currently, as you were saying, it favors them. But I think next to overturning Citizens United, I think this is the biggest issue facing our democracy. Like you said, it's gerrymandering at its worst.
You know, one reason for optimism is that many of the legislators that could adopt this reform today will be gone by the time a new redistricting plan would go into place. The turnover, the churn in the legislature, is so high that when we have another redistricting, it's possible the only incumbent legislator still in office will be Senator Fred Risser.
The longest-serving legislator in the United States, I believe, at this point.
Exactly.
All right, Tammy, thanks a lot for that call. We've got Matt on the line next in Oshkosh. Matt, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. The only thing I see going on here is the Democrats have found themselves out of power at the state level. And this is just a desperate effort to try to shake something up to give them a chance to get some control back. I think the system should stay exactly the way it has been all through the past when the Democrats were in power or the Republicans. It's just fine the way it is. Usually the only reason you want change is to try to change the outcome of things. Thank you.
Matt, thanks for the call. So, Roger, yeah, Democrats are sponsoring this. Is this just something to give them a chance next time around?
Well, I would fault Democrats for not invoking a reform agenda when they had the opportunity. But the fact is, 49% of 2.9 million votes cast in Wisconsin's congressional races in 2012 resulted in Republicans winning 5 of 8 congressional seats with less than half the vote. I mentioned earlier that in 2012 there were 174,000 more votes for Democrats than Republicans, and the Democrats only ended up with 39 of 99 seats. I don't think, objectively looking at those statistics, that is fair. And I fought both parties for gerrymandering, for protecting their own incumbents, and creating a system that makes districts in Wisconsin look just absolutely horrendously unfair. I think that people that are of a middle road, that advocate for compromise and conciliation and civility in the process of our political system, see that redistricting reform has some significant benefits that will foster less partisanship. It will bring more compromise and conciliation to the legislative process, and it will result in better government.
Back to our callers now with Roger on the line in Green Bay. Roger in Green Bay, hi.
Hello, yes, I have just an honest question. This is something I've thought of before, and maybe it's a bad idea. I want to hear what your commentator says. How about the counties? Each county is one district. It's just an idea, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Roger Utenhamer, how would that work?
Well, that would work better than what we have now, where we're dividing communities for political purpose, where we're diminishing the ability of a community to maintain its sense of identity. I think there was a time in Wisconsin many years ago when most legislative districts were drawn by county line, and it worked well with 99 assembly districts and 72 counties. That may be an alternative that would be acceptable.
But it depends on the population of each county. The lines,
sure.
It might get tricky to draw even districts that way, right?
Well, what we could sure do is a lot better job than what we've got now.
So what's next? This legislation has been introduced. What are you looking for next in the process to try to make this change a reality?
I think there is a growing sense of support for redistricting. I would predict that there will be editorial support throughout the state from our newspapers. I think that when people hear about redistricting reform and come to understand the insidious influence that the current system has on our political process, that there will be a growing public support. And I predict also that there will be bipartisan support. We've had very impressive Republican support for redistricting reform in the past from people like former State Senator Dale Schultz and Senator Michael Ellis and State Representative Steve Freese. Today, a Republican, Todd Novak from Dodgeville, has endorsed passage of this specific legislation. And I believe with editorial support and more information, there will be a groundswell of public support behind the concept of redistricting reform.
Roger, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Before I leave, I have to tell you that I have great respect for Central Time. And as a commercial broadcaster in Door County, I consider Wisconsin Public Radio our primary competition.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That means a lot coming from a member of the Wisconsin Broadcasting Hall of Fame. That was Roger Utnehmer from the Board of Common Cause Wisconsin, owner of Nicolet Broadcasting, talking about redistricting reform. More on the topic on the Joy Cardine Show Monday morning at 7. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard will be back with me on Monday. Coming up, Governor Walker launched a reboot of his presidential campaign yesterday, and Hillary Clinton made her first campaign visit to Wisconsin. We'll take a look at what they had to say. First, over the last few years, cities around Wisconsin have been slowly decriminalizing marijuana, in effect, by adopting local ordinances. An investigative report examining those ordinances shows that 9 of the state's 10 largest cities have decriminalized possession in some circumstances. Smaller municipalities have followed suit. The most recent central Wisconsin location to lower its marijuana penalty is Stevens Point. Just last month, the city cut the fine for first offense possession to $100, down from $300. Sari Lesk is with us to talk about these laws around the state. She's the public issues investigator for the Stevens Point Journal. Sari, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, give us some more detail here. Looking at marijuana laws around Wisconsin and local ordinances, what were the trends you were seeing over the last couple of years?
Well, it looks like a lot of it's trending toward decriminalization, especially for first-time offenses, not so much for subsequent offenses after that. I'd say there's not exactly a trend in the reasoning behind that.
Not a trend in the reasoning? Why not?
Well, it looks like it comes from a lot of different schools of thought. Some people argue for decriminalization based on severity of the crime, for example. Other people argue for it based on racial disparities in applying the law. Some people argue for it in regards to the economy. Some of it's about creating a permanent criminal record for people who, you know, kind of dabble in marijuana when they're young and then they're stuck with this criminal record for the rest of their lives.
So a patchwork of reasons for the changes, and it sounds like a patchwork of laws and ordinances. So depending on where one got caught with marijuana, the punishment could be very different. Can you talk about the range of consequences that's out there?
Sure, yeah. When we were looking at these ordinances across the state, for example, you can be caught in a private residence in Madison, and you're not even facing punishment if you're in Madison, if you're in a private residence with a certain amount, you know, like a user amount of marijuana. But in other places, the fine could be up to $1,000. In Green Bay, I believe it was $1,000 as a maximum fine for possession of up to 25 grams.
And what did you hear? You talked to some police officers around the state and police officials. What's the reaction you're hearing? And again, is that a variety depending on where you are?
Yes, there's a huge variety in it. In Madison, for example, they kind of came from the mindset that, you know, this isn't the biggest thing that we need to be dealing with. We've got other problems. We've got other drugs that are worth more of our time than marijuana. But in other places, police were saying that it is important to be taking a hard stance against this because they're concerned about marijuana being a gateway drug and people who first start dabbling with marijuana moving on to harder substances after that.
to make things even maybe a little more complicated, as I understand from your reporting, sometimes police officers have the option of treating it with a fine or ignoring it or referring it to prosecutors for marijuana possession.
That is correct. Ordinances are just another tool for police officers. They're created within the bounds of a state statute. So officers have the tool of an ordinance at their discretion if they choose to use it, but they are not required to. So, for example, in the city of Marshfield, which is near us here in Stevens Point, they told us that they do have an ordinance on file, but they don't tend to use it too frequently because they see it as an opportunity, if they were to take the criminal route with charges, to have more leverage on their side, to bargain with people who they find with user amounts of marijuana to get to the dealers who they really want to be getting after. So sometimes they make the decision to use criminal charges as a way of dealing with the problem.
We're talking to Sari Lesk with the Stevens Point Journal about marijuana laws and local ordinances around Wisconsin. It is a patchwork. Where you get caught matters very much in what you could be charged with, even if you're charged at all for marijuana possession in certain circumstances. Sari, I mentioned that in your town there, Stevens Point, there was a recent change. Can you go into that story? What changed in Stevens Point?
Yeah, so here in Stevens Point, we first adopted an ordinance, or I should say the city council first adopted an ordinance in, I believe it was October 2014, so just about a year ago. It was decriminalizing possession of up to 5 grams of marijuana, and it came with a $300 flat rate forfeiture. Now, that did not include the court fees. That was just the initial forfeiture plus court fees. But just this summer, I believe it was in either July or August, they decided to lower that fine. It came from a request from a local citizen based on his experiences with cancer and going through chemotherapy and not having medical marijuana as a tool for him to deal with some of the side effects that he was experiencing. He asked if the city council, after all this research that he'd done, might consider lowering the fine. He said it would bring it more in line with the severity of the offense if they brought the fine down to $100. And it was a split decision, but the city council did vote this summer to do that.
And is this, again, a thing where there's flexibility, where police can use the ordinance or use the state law depending on the circumstance?
I would say yes, but in conversation with the Stevens Point Police Department, they did indicate that they tend to lean toward the ordinance if the circumstances of the crime would allow for that. However, I think that it might be important to note that a lot of times it's going to be dependent on the totality of circumstances in which you find somebody in possession of marijuana. For example, when police find people, they're arresting them on a totally separate charge, and they also happen to find marijuana on their person, even if it's a user amount. I think that's another circumstance that police have told me they might lean toward the criminal charge because there's other circumstances involved.
And we should point out, we've been talking about possession probably up to a certain amount, depending on the locality. We're not talking about a sale of marijuana here for the most part, are we? That is something that that communities aren't particularly decriminalizing at this point?
That is correct. I have not heard much. It might be happening, but my research did not come up with anything regarding decriminalizing the sale of marijuana. The state law that might be, it's been presented in the legislature. I'm not quite sure where it is at this point because we did do this story a bit ago, so it might have gotten that committee hearing that was being requested, but that bill wanted to decriminalize both recreational and medical marijuana, and it did, I believe, have some provisions in there regarding the sales of it because it said that the goal was to take the sales, you know, out of the shadows, out of the dark, to create some more safety.
Right. We've seen, of course, other states legalize marijuana, Colorado, Washington. From talking to people involved in this story about marijuana decriminalization in certain communities, do you get the feeling that people think this might happen in Wisconsin anytime soon?
I don't. Having spoken to legislators, and we also spoke to the Attorney General about his opinions on this, and it seemed like it was getting a fairly partisan reaction, and it did not seem that enough people were getting on board with it in the legislature quite yet for this bill to come forward all the way. But, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I guess it could happen.
Well, want to invite listeners to join in on this topic at 800-642-1234. Should marijuana be decriminalized in your local community at the state level? How would you like to see that work? And what's the situation in your town, your city, your part of Wisconsin? If you're in law enforcement, how are these laws enforced where you work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Sari, are you seeing maybe more dominoes falling? Are other communities around the state going to be evaluating their own ordinances when it comes to marijuana possession?
I think you could say that. I mean, for example, just hearing Stephen's point, I was told when they put this ordinance into effect last year, the reason they did it was because they were the only municipality here that did not have an ordinance. We have the village of Plover, which had its own ordinance, and Portage County had an ordinance, but the city of Stevens Point did not, so creating one brought it in line with the rest of the county. I was also told by the police in Wisconsin Rapids that they don't have an ordinance in place at this time, but they are looking into it.
Sari, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Sari Lesk, public issues investigator for the Stevens Point Journal. She was with us to talk about her investigative report on marijuana laws and ordinances around Wisconsin. You can find a link to that report over at the Central Time Facebook page. Now, coming up, we will take your calls on marijuana laws. Do you think pot possession should be decriminalized at the local level, at the state level, federal level, for that matter? Why? Why not? Do you think it should be legalized but only for medicinal purposes? How about recreational purposes? What do you think about the idea that marijuana is a gateway drug, shouldn't be decriminalized, shouldn't be legalized? Call now. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll get your calls in just a few moments. First, a look at some of the latest news with Kristen Durst. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're taking your calls now about marijuana laws here in Wisconsin. As we just heard, they're changing. Ordinances are in many communities, decriminalizing, in effect, marijuana possession in some cases, in some places, in some amounts in a lot of communities, changing it to fines, maybe lowering those fines in other communities, some places the full force of the law. What do you think the law should be when it comes to marijuana possession and marijuana sales? Have the ordinances recently changed in your town? What happened? Were you happy or upset about that change? Do you think marijuana should be legalized for medicinal, recreational purposes? Is it a gateway drug? Should stay illegal? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll start with Celia in Madison now. Celia, hi.
I am actually a court clerk here in Madison, and I was just going to let you know, here in Madison, if you are issued a citation for, you know, a user amount of marijuana, it's actually $1 plus for court costs, which turns out being about $138, whereas a citation for paraphernalia is actually around $350, so sometimes they'll kind of get around that by writing a companion ticket. Otherwise, if you cross over into Fitchburg, which is right outside of Madison and, you know, basically part of Madison, it's actually over $1,000 if you get a citation for the same exact thing. So even within Dane County, depending on if you cross over that line into Fitchburg, you might end up paying 10 times as much for the same exact offense.
As a court clerk in Madison, do you see these cases that $1 fine plus court costs come across your desk a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I just had a number of them this morning.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing what's going on in Madison and in Dane County, Celia. We'll go next to John with us in Menominee. John, hi. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. I just wanted to make a comment that I think that medicinal marijuana, you know, has its place. And I do believe that it should really be legalized as far as medicinal goes. Now, the street marijuana is considerably different. There are many different types of medicinal marijuana that you can get for specific ailments, just like any type of medications that you can get for any type of an ailment. So that would be just my comment. I think medicinal, if you're card-carrying and you have the special medicinal marijuana in your possession, I think it should be overlooked.
So if it's doctor's orders, the equivalent of a prescription, you're okay with that?
I am okay with that, yes.
John, thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts on that. We're talking marijuana laws and ordinances here in Wisconsin. Want to hear what you think? At 800-642-1234, post on the Central Time Facebook page. Our next caller is Kristen with us in Baraboo. Kristen, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a surgeon in Baraboo, and where I trained, we had access to medical marijuana. Of course, in Wisconsin, we don't. And what I find is that I have very limited options to give my patients for pain. Certainly acute pain, narcotics are fine, but after a couple of days, they're just not a good drug. And marijuana would be at least another option without nearly as bad of side effects.
And Kristen, I've heard the argument that maybe that's right, but we haven't. There's not enough testing, not enough evidence on that to where we should be using it for pain control. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would agree. There's not enough evidence. In terms of evidence-based medicine, there's a paucity of evidence. But with it being a Schedule I drug, we can't get the evidence. And so it's really a catch-22. Without changing the schedule, that we're hamstrung and we can't proceed with any research anyway.
And as compared, you mentioned opiate medications, and we've heard problems with those in some cases leading to addiction when used legally or illegally. So are you saying marijuana, even if we don't know that much about it, given the alternative, it might be better?
What I'm finding with a few patients is that they are accidentally overdosing on opiates. And I've lost patients to that. And that is really unlikely to happen with marijuana. If a four-year-old child gets into the marijuana, that's certainly a problem. If a four-year-old child gets into the Vicodin or the fentanyl patches, that's a dead child.
Kristen, thanks a lot for sharing your unique perspective on that issue. I appreciate it. We'll go next to Nate with us in Adams. Nate, hi.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. What do you think, Nate?
Well, I think there has to be something done. I had a younger brother. He started smoking marijuana when he was about 17. And, this was just recreational. Well, he worked his way through. He was in and out of prison for thievery and that kind of thing. Never a violent crime did he commit. Finally, just a few weeks before his 50th birthday, he by that time had graduated up into heroin and the opiates, and he killed himself with an overdose. Not intentionally.
Nate, I'm really sorry for your loss and sorry to hear that story. Because of that, do you think maybe don't legalize marijuana based on that experience?
I don't think it's good to legalize. If there is a legitimate medical use, I think then we should be looking seriously at that. But we've got enough recreational drugs out there in the form of alcohol, for one. And even though alcohol is terrible, we know how it acts. We don't know how the subsequent generations of marijuana users' offsprings are going to react in the long run. There's just too many questions that haven't been thoroughly answered.
Nate, thanks a lot. And again, sorry for your loss, but thanks for sharing your story and your thoughts on marijuana legalization. We'll go next to Scott with us in Platteville. Scott, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think about this?
Well, it's too bad. I have the same comments of your previous caller, and that is the number one gateway drug is alcohol. Absolutely. And it's 100% legal. You know, everybody can get it.
Well, where do you go from there? Are you thinking alcohol should be more restricted or marijuana should be less restricted?
Oh, marijuana should be less restrictive. You know, my God, we tried prohibition on alcohol in the 20s. It didn't work. The war on drugs is not working, you know, especially on marijuana. It just incarcerates hundreds of thousands of people for something that, you know, should ought to be legalized.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts. We are asking you your thoughts on marijuana legalization and decriminalization. Recent report finds that 9 out of 10 of Wisconsin's biggest cities have, in effect, decriminalized marijuana in certain circumstances for possession. A lot of communities lowering their fines, changing their ordinances on this over the last couple of years. Want to know what you think. 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Jason on Facebook writes, make it legal, and anyone still in prison or jail for selling or possessing it, he says, set them free. Let law enforcement focus on real crime, catching the real criminals. Thanks for your comment. Jason, we'll go next to Maria in Sparta. Maria, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I think marijuana should be legalized nationwide. I've heard a lot of great comments from the guests before. I think they're saying a lot of good things. I do respect everyone's opinion, but I think that legalizing marijuana nationwide is a way to help America get out of debt, if you will. I also feel there is, like the person Jake Facebook commented, that there is a lot of people that have been put in jail, put into prison for marijuana crimes. And I don't believe that those people committed a violent crime. I don't think they should be in there. I do agree that if it is decriminalized and legalized nationwide, set those people do not feel they should be in there. And I just turned your show on, and I thought it was a really great comment. I've never called in before. Just want to say, yay, Wisconsin. Way to go.
Thanks a lot for calling in and sharing your thoughts on the issue. We'll go next to Bill in Green Bay. Bill, hi.
Hi. Yeah, my opinion on the subject is legalize it across the board. It's a plant. It's not a drug. Drugs are what the companies make, and look at the hell that they cause. It's, you know, when I smoke a little bit of marijuana, I might get real crazy, like watch a movie on my couch, eat a bowl of ice cream, and fall asleep. I don't know. I just don't see it as a drug.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Kathy on the line in Nina. Kathy, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm on the painkillers. I've had two major back surgeries, and the marijuana does take the pain away. Yes, painkillers are not good for our organs, and I wish they would legalize this because there would be medical marijuana, and you know what? All it does is make you go to sleep, and you know what? They should outlaw nicotine and alcohol because it's a bad drug. It's hard to get rid of, but I think they should legalize marijuana.
Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. Good luck dealing with the pain from the back surgeries. Larry is next with us in Black River Falls. Larry, hi.
Hi, yeah, I just want to comment as far as legalizing the medical marijuana. I have a six-year-old grandson that has had numerous seizures, and my daughter went to Colorado to get medical marijuana for him. That little boy hasn't had seizures for over a year. Recently, they've had to move to Minnesota so they could get the medicine, but I think medical marijuana is just the greatest. Maybe not the recreational, but medical, definitely.
And I think for seizures, there's a form of medication that is the active ingredient in marijuana, I think in pill or liquid form or something like that?
Liquid form, but it doesn't have the stuff that makes you high. I mean, you're not giving your kid something that makes you high. It's something that's helping with the seizures. I mean, he's a completely different little boy today than he was a year ago.
Larry,
that's medical marijuana.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story, Larry. We'll go next to Janelle in Black River Falls. Janelle, hi.
Hi, I'm just calling to talk about the process of how when someone is apprehended with marijuana on them. My son, when he was 17, had some marijuana with him, and they convict you of this, but they're not actually convicted. It's called a forfeiture. So because it has to run through the court system, it is on your record. And it's not a misdemeanor, it's not a felony, but it is still on your record. And so when these companies, like, say, Checkmate or whatever, they now have him listed as a two-time criminal for possession of drugs, of THC, even though, you know, on his record, it only is a forfeiture, and people don't know what a forfeiture is. So it's kind of incriminating when they're that young and they have possession of it, and it ran through as criminal, and then when they take the plea and pay the fine, it's a forfeiture. So it's really kind of confusing.
Janelle, thanks a lot for that call. Thanks to all of you for sharing your thoughts on the issue and your posts on Facebook. You can keep doing that, by the way. Go over to the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.